and then perhaps we should just take a quick round of the introduction so that we know who is here. I will start with myself. My name is Dorothy Ramudibe, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Manana Kadi, Whip of this committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Grace Beke, the member of this committee. Morning, everyone. My name is Connie Diemo, member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mutu Bumalo, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mpakamo Matanzima. I'm the senior manager at Auditor General.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson Member. My name is Lawrence Antheel, and I'm the business executive responsible for this portfolio in Auditor General. My colleague to my left-hand side is actually from the Northwest province, our office there, and she's involved in the audit of the women and children portfolio in that province, just to explain to you why she's here. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Mbakamo. I'm the committee.
Good morning. I'm Hashpa Evans, the content advisor to the committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Sadia Rowan, and I'm also from Blackfish.
Good morning. Rob Steiner, Dutch student, Management, Economics and Rights, and intern at Blackfish.
Good morning. My name is Bintu, and I'm with the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. I'm a student in France, and I'm also an intern at Blackfish.
Good morning, everyone. I'm a Canadian student. I'm studying social work, and I'm also an intern at Blackfish.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sarah. I'm a French student. I'm an intern at Blackfish.
Good morning, my name is Muzori Sitwani from the Department of Women, Children and People Disabilities.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Venusa Baruza from the Department of Women, Children and People Disabilities.
Good morning, my name is Tanya Ramchandi.
I'm from the Department of Women, Children and People Disabilities. Good morning, members. My name is Toma Bunjinga. I'm from the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Theo Machaba from the Saint Hartford Mansion.
Good morning, Colleen. I'm in Mitchell.
Thank you very much for those introductions. I think through introduction then everyone becomes free to listen or participate, knowing exactly who is with us in this room. A very warm welcome to everyone. This morning, we are going to be getting a briefing by the Auditor General's office from South Africa on the audit outcomes of the Department on Women, Children and People with Disability, and also on the Commission for Gender Equality, right? For the financial year 2012-2013. And later on, we will be getting to hear from the Fiscal and Financial Commission on the spending patterns of the Department of Women, Children, and Persons with Disabilities. As we all know that the Auditor General is a state institution which was created to strengthen constitutional democracy in the Republic of South Africa. And no person or organ of state may interfere with their function. which is accountable to the National Assembly and must report on their activities and the performance of their functions to the National Assembly. And at this point in time, without wasting any time, I will then hand over to yourself.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Sorry, before we there, can we get any apologies?
I've received three apologies from members. One is from Honourable Kose, who could not attend today. The other one is from Honourable Teacher Taylor, she's attending the Cooperative Governance Portfolio Committee. And the last one is from Honourable Moore, she's attending the Social Development Portfolio Committee.
Thank you. We can proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members. we've handed out two documents from which I will do the briefing. We don't have a computer to do a slideshow today, but that's really not an issue at all, because I will take you through the documents in a way that I'm sure it will help you a great deal. I'm going to start off with a little document that looks something like this. So one page slide, some colors and blocks, and I'm going to do most of the presentation from that. What I'm going to deal with is covered in detail in this document, which you can then use for your later references. We handed out color ones for the committee members this morning. It's important that you've got the color one. The chairperson for the color one. You are welcome to stop me at any time, and then I will also take questions at the end of the presentation. As Edison indicated, I'll be dealing with two entities, the Department of Women and Children and People with Disabilities and the Commission for Gender Equality. This one-page summary gives us a high-level summary of the audit outcomes of the 12-13 financial year. And at the first glance, you will note from those yellow blocks that it is unqualified opinions financially for both of the entities. So from a financial point of view, we were satisfied with what is in the financial statements. Just to remind you again that we cover three areas in our audit reports. We cover an opinion on financial statements, which can be either an unqualified audit opinion, which means we are satisfied it's material, it's fairly taken all material respects. Then we get qualified audit opinions, which can either be a disclaimer of an audit opinion, that's the opinion that we normally express when we could not get adequate audit evidence to support the amounts disclosed in the financial statements, or we can get an adverse opinion, that's the opinion that we normally express when we disagree with what management has presented in the financial statements. Then we also report in our audit reports our findings on our audit of predetermined objectives. And thirdly, we also report on non-compliance with laws and regulations. And then we've got the last section in our audit report where we report on internal controls, and that's the internal controls deviations which led to any significant findings in our audit reports. So if you look at these two entities, both of them are yellow, which means that they are financially unqualified, but we do have some findings on either performance information or compliance with laws or regulations, or both. In this case, it was only findings on compliance, because if you look at a bit more to your right under the heading which is findings on the determined objectives, usefulness and reliability, you'll see it's white. It means we've got no significant findings which we deem to put in audit reports with regard to predetermined objectives for both of these entities. But you will see from the movement point of view, we say there's no movement from last year. Ideally what we are looking for is that all our audit reports should be green, unqualified, no findings on predetermined objectives and no findings on compliance with laws and regulations. So from a focus point of view, there should be a lot of focus on compliance with laws and regulations in both of these entities, because that is what is needed to move them into the category where they will actually be what we call clean audits. I will then just deal with the Department of Women and Children in terms of the detailed findings. You will see that there were findings on supply chain management. If the box is blue, it means that there were some findings in the audit report relating to that specific area. So there were findings with regard to supply chain management, human resources, expenditure management, the annual financial statements, and internal audit. Supply chain management is the area that then still needs some focus, because there were findings with regard to compliance in following supply chain management processes. Typically for procurement under 500,000, not always following the required processes, tax clearance certificates not always being requested, and that leads to irregular expenditure. You know, and therefore it's very important that should be addressed. If you look at page 11 of this FICA document, you will see there's a summary there of irregular expenditure. And for the department itself, irregular expenditure decreased from 35 million to 6 million. However, we would like it to there not to be any irregular expenditure at all, and therefore processes and procedures need to be put in place to first of all prevent the irregular expenditure. That's a requirement of the Public Finance Management Act. So there needs to be controls in place to prevent it. Policies and procedures, training to officials, and then also consequence management in case of transgressions. The department needs to determine in case of irregular expenditure should someone be held accountable and then take the necessary action. So that's quite important also from an oversight point of view for the committee to focus on irregular expenditure to get it eradicated, and then to make sure there's proper policies and procedures and internal controls in place on a day-to-day basis. Then there was a funding on human resource management, and this funding basically relates to the fact that the department did not always control the leave that officials have taken. Leave should be immediately after it had been requested on the leave form, should immediately be recorded on the leave system, and there should be processes in place to make sure that all leave is indeed recorded. This is also very important, first of all, to make sure that all leave is recorded, but secondly, this can have a secondary impact on the financial statements, because there's a disclosure note in the financial statements where you have to record your outstanding leave liability. So if your leave balances are not correct at year-end because you have not captured all your leave, then it will also have a negative impact on that disclosure note in the financial statements. The heading expenditure management basically deals with the requirement of the Public Finance Management Act, which determines that accounting officers must take appropriate steps to prevent irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and unauthorized expenditure. So in this specific case, it relates to the irregular expenditure that has occurred. So we are reporting that the accounting officer does not take effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure. The next block deals with the AFS, stands for Annual Financial Statements. There is a requirement in the Public Finance Management Act, Section 40, that when a department submits its financial statements for audit, that at that point in time it should already be fairly presenting the financial state of affairs. So when we receive the financial statements and we audit it, there should not be material adjustments that have to be made to the financial statements to enable us to express an unqualified audit opinion. In the case of the department, in the audit process, material errors were identified, which the department had to correct in the financial statements to enable us to express an unqualified audit opinion. So very important then, the focus should be on putting systems and procedures in place on a day-to-day and a month-to-month basis to ensure that the financial statements that are presented for auditing are actually accurate and complete at the date of presentation for audit. So there should be a lot of focus throughout the year in terms of putting systems and controls and procedures in place to make sure that whatever financial information is presented is accurate and complete. And this is very important, not just from an audit point of view, but also from a management point of view. It's important that the accounting officer receives accurate financial statements on a monthly basis. We know that there's a requirement of the Public Finance Management Act to prepare management accounts, and it even gets uploaded to National Treasury. But that set of accounts is a very high-level set of accounts. It doesn't get close to the for the full set of financial statements which the entity has to present for the audit process. So what we are actually recommending, and we realize it's not a requirement of the legislation, that we are actually recommending that entities, all entities, should be compiling a full set of financial statements on a monthly basis. That would enable the accounting officer to have a full view on the financial situation and be able to manage it on a month-to-month basis. It will also make sure that everyone involved in the preparation of the financial statements get that exercise 12 times a year. And we believe that that would make a difference in ensuring that the financial statements ultimately submitted for audit will be accurate and complete. We therefore also recommend to the committee from an oversight point of view that you request the entities to actually prepare monthly financial statements and that you follow up on that in your quarterly monitoring. The last important item under the department you will see that it falls under the heading of compliance is the internal audit function. The internal audit function of the department was not functioning in terms of the regulations for the financial year under review. And it's mainly due to capacity constraints. There was a head of internal audit appointed during the year. However, there was no capacity to assist the head of internal audit to actually execute the audit plan. And if you look then in terms of what is required in terms of the treasury regulations, it leads to a situation where there's then actually non-compliance with about five different requirements of the treasury regulations. There's no need for me at this point in time to go through the detailed requirements of those regulations because in essence what it means is it means you must have an effective internal audit section. They must be able to do a risk assessment. They must be able to execute the audit plan in time. They must focus on financial issues. They must focus on predetermined objectives. They must focus on compliance with laws and regulations. They must timely report on those findings to the accounting officer and to the audit committee so that corrective actions can be taken. This should make a significant impact on changing the environment within the department on compliance to assist the accounting officer to take the department forward to a situation where there will be no findings on compliance with laws and regulations. So first of all, that unit needs to be strengthened. And secondly, if the focus of that unit is correct and the focus on the unit, because typically what they should be focusing on in terms of a risk-based approach will typically be on these units which I've been discussing with you now. And therefore, that could go a long way in changing the audit outcomes of the department. lastly, we then deal with the areas of internal control. We are saying from an internal control perspective, and we are focusing on three areas. We are focusing on leadership. What is it that the leadership should do? What is it that management should do on a day-to-day basis? And what are the issues from a governance point of view? From a governance point of view, the governance area basically deals with risk assessment, internal audit, and audit committee. So what we are saying from governance point of view is that the internal audit unit needs to be strengthened, and that would address the internal control deficiency with regard to governance. With regard to financial and performance management, we say that management needs to establish those monthly controls to ensure that the financial statement presented for audit are accurate and complete. And secondly, management also should also have those day-to-day controls in place to ensure that there's compliance with laws and regulations, but more specifically with regard to supply chain management. So it's very important that whenever procurement takes place, that procurement takes place in a controlled environment. Each and every official in the department that is involved in procurement should be aware under which circumstances should I get three quotations, under which circumstances should I get a valid tax clearance certificate, under which circumstances should we actually go out on tender. And management should manage those processes. There should be a review of each procurement process. There should be a sign-off of each procurement process to make sure that all the policies and procedures have been adhered to. If you follow that process, you will not incur irregular expenditure. An example is if the requirement is that you should have a valid tax clearance certificate, and that's for all procurement over 30,000, before the manager approves the audit, the manager should first verify that you get legal quotations, did you get a statutory certificate, did you buy the reference point system correctly. If not, don't approve the purchase order, let the process first be corrected. But if you at that point in time approve the process, while for instance there's not a valid tax clearance certificate, you're not going to comply and you're going to incur regular expenditure. So that is the day-to-day process which we say management must put in place. And therefore it is important if we look at the leadership level, to set up the leadership in the department, the DG and the EDGs, must create that environment to make sure that there's policies and procedures, make sure that there's training with regard to the policies and procedures, make sure that these policies and procedures are properly communicated, review non-compliance, and take appropriate action if there's non-compliance. That deals with with the key issues on the department. This is one additional paragraph that we do have in the audit report, which deals with the achievement of plan targets. So what we are saying is, although we are satisfied that the performance information that's been reported in the report of the department is fairly dated or accurate and complete, we've noted that 36 targets were not achieved during the year under review, and we then recommend that the accounting officer must disclose in the annual report the reasons for non-achievement of those targets. So if you go into the annual report, the reasons for the non-achievement of those targets is disclosed in the annual report for users to understand why it was not achieved. So it's not negative reporting from outside, it's a statement of fact. So something which has been adequately disclosed in the annual report of the department. On the CGE, similar issues with regard to supply chain management, in that the required procedures are not always followed with regard to supply chain management, and there's an additional item here which is important to take note of, and it basically deals with that bid adjudication committees was not always constituted in the required manner as per the Treasury regulation. So that is just an item which can actually be quickly fixed. You know, it's just to ensure compliance, to constitute it in terms of the requirements of the Treasury regulations. But in the other areas, similar findings, tax lien certificates, and the reference point system not always dealt with appropriately. Therefore, also the finding then on expenditure management, because the moment the supply chain management processes were not followed, it actually leads to irregular expenditure. And you can look at page 11 of this detailed report. You will note there that the irregular expenditure has also reduced from 5.5 million to 1.9 million in the 12-13 financial year. So there's some improvement in that environment, and therefore, if there's enough focus on the specific environment, it can definitely change to also enable the CGE to obtain a clean audit. What now? Even an issue with regard to asset management at the CGE, which is important to note, and it deals with assets. In that there were assets with a book value of 1.197 million rands that had to be written off because those assets could not be found during the asset verification process of the entity. So it's very important to make sure that the proper monthly control over assets, to make sure that assets are always verified, it's always in existence, and to have controls in place to make sure that you don't lose assets by way of theft or any other means. So it's very important that the asset management environment should improve a bit. And in fact, that also it's also a compliance matter, because it's actually a requirement of the Treasury Regulations 10.1.18 to say which requires that a department should have a proper system to safeguard and maintain to maintain assets. And yes, therefore, you will see, if you look to the right hand side, there's a finding under asset management, and that finding relates to non-compliance to that specific section of the Treasury Regulations. So it's very important in that environment that controls are enhanced with regard to the safeguarding of assets. Therefore, in conclusion, if you look at the internal controls, we highlight that it's important that leadership take appropriate steps to ensure that policies and procedures are established and communicated, so that everyone understands which internal controls they are responsible for and how they should actually implement those internal controls. Once again, specifically with regard to supply chain management and with regard to asset management. And then it's important at a management level that management should have monitoring controls in place to make sure that those policies and procedures are actually executed, and that those day-to-day controls are actually executed by the individual managers. Also to make sure that laws and regulations are complied to on a day-to-day basis. I just want to quickly take you through this particular document just to familiarize you a bit with it, and you will note that what I've communicated with you now is actually contained in this document. If you look at page 3 of this document, at the bottom there, under number 2, audit opinion history, that just gives you a bit of a history over the last 5 years in terms of the audit opinions. So you will note there that the department, which has only been established 3 years ago, is yellow, which means unqualified for either findings or determined objectives or compliance. So no improvement over the last 2 years from an audit opinion point of view, or audit report point of view. And the Commission of Gender and Equality actually moved from a disclaimer in 08-09 to qualified for the last 3 years. So over a 5 year period, there has been a significant improvement in that environment. However, for the last 3 years, the status was maintained. The document did actually give you detail on which were the areas which we would qualified in the past, and if you look at that on page 4, you will see that for predetermined objectives, it's actually the third year that both entities do not have significant findings on predetermined objectives. The focus areas on page 5, you'll see that those red blocks talk exactly to what I've discussed with you in the briefing up to now. For both entities, supply chain management immediately stands out as an area that needs to be focused on. HR management stands out for department, which means they should be focused on the leave recording. And material errors stands out for the department, which means they should be focused on ensuring that the financial statements are accurate and complete when they are submitted for audit purposes. The rest of the pages deals with it with the items in detail, as I've discussed with you. There's one heading which I haven't addressed up to now, and that's the heading on page 7, which deals with information technology controls. There's a lot of detail in there, but in essence, it comes to the following basics, and that is that there's a requirement that all entities, and in fact, it's a new approved policy also now, that all entities in government must have a ID governance framework. You know, so it's very important that should be established, and that is the situation for both these entities. So ID governance framework, important to focus on that, formulate it now, make sure it gets adequately reviewed and approved through the structures within the entities. Then very important for the department, security management policies and guidelines, very important that those policies should be documented, communicated, and then there should be a review on a regular basis to ensure that those requirements are complied with. And then user access controls, also very important that there should be a proper policy for user access controls and that policy should be implemented. But user access controls deals with is basically who can get access to what on your systems. And then under which circumstances should that access levels be changed? How often should the passwords be changed? You know, so it deals with those requirements. And then the last important one under department is that the department has not formally designed IT service continuity controls. We call it disaster recovery. So it is very important that each and every entity should have a disaster management policy. What will you do in the case of a disaster? If, once again, it should be communicated to everyone so that when that, if a disaster happens, that you are ready to immediately implement that. This can significantly impact on business continuity of any entity. Because, and you should not just have a policy documented and communicated policy. You should actually test your policy in practice and make sure that it actually works. So for CGE, it is similar in terms of the IT governance framework, and then there should be a bit more focus on the implementation of service level agreements with service providers, and then also user account management, and then very important, inadequate design of change control procedures. What this relates to is that you should have proper processes. So if, once again, it should be in your policy, and then you should properly implement the process whenever you make changes to your programs in your environment. It should be properly approved and documented who made what change and why was that change made. And that should ultimately also be tested in the end of the day. This is to prevent that no unauthorized changes are made to your accounting system, which you will not know what the impact of that will be. The last thing which I would like to highlight to you is actually the second last one on page 11. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You will see that there was no fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by any of the two entities. I've already discussed irregular expenditure, and then there were also no unauthorized expenditure by the department. On page 13, I've summarized the commitments which also discussed with the chairperson. We do believe that if the committee focused on these three areas from an oversight point of view, it could make a significant difference in moving the audit outcomes from the yellow to the green. And it basically relates to the monitoring of progress against the annual performance plans for both of the entities. So on a quarterly basis, to track the performance against the approved targets to ensure that at year-end, the targets have actually been achieved. That would also entail getting confirmation from management through the quarterly reports that the quarterly reports are actually accurate, that they've been verified, and that all the information in there is substantiated by actual evidence, which up to now has not been a problem because there's no negative audit finding on it. But that the attention should then be on ensuring that all the targets have actually been achieved. What's very important is that we recommend that all our entities that we audit should have an audit action plan. So entities should take these audit outcomes that have been communicated also to the entities. The entities should develop an audit action plan, and they should implement this audit action plan effectively to ensure that there's no negative findings or no repeat of any of these findings. And therefore, we believe it's important that the portfolio committees should also engage with the entities from an oversight point of view to track whether those action plans are there and to track whether those action plans are actually being implemented successfully throughout the year. And then very importantly that we recommend that there should be a lot of focus also from the committee on ensuring that effective internal audit is established within the department, it's capacitated, that it's got an annual plan and that it's actual performance against that actual plan to make sure that there's successful implementation of internal audit, but also then in this case to make sure that there's no non-compliance that will be reported in the audit report. On page 12 of this document, has got a slide which we call the combined assurance model. And it's important just to understand what this model is about. This model divides the assurance providers in three categories. And these are the assurance providers which must ultimately assure that the financial statements performance information is reliable and that there's compliance with laws and regulations. And it starts off with the left-hand side of the senior management. And you will see in the narrative below there, it is a clear indication of what is the responsibility of senior management. Senior management must take immediate action to address day-to-day controls. Then it's the accounting officer who should ultimately take responsibility for a specific entity. Then the executive authority also has a role to monitor progress, to monitor performance, and to also take appropriate action if there's not enough controls in the environment and if there's negative audit findings. Then a second level of assurance, and you'll see it moves further away from the entity. We then first highlight coordinating and monitoring institutions, which in this case there's not a specific department which is kind of monitoring or coordinating responsibility with regard to this department. It will be mainly the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, which will do some oversight over the performance information. There's, for instance, the self-assessment that they require the accounting officers to do in terms of the performance information, and they do a review and they compile a report which gets tabled in Parliament. Then, very important, internal audit. And right next to internal audit, the audit committee. The internal audit and the audit committee works together. You will find that if you do not have a effective internal audit section, it to a large extent actually renders your audit committee ineffective, because then the audit committee does not have internal audit reports to deal with. That they will only get feedback from the external auditors on areas that needs to be improved. And remember that we actually only come twice a year for the interim and the final audit. Yes, we do the key control assessments on a quarterly basis. That key control assessment that we are doing is actually the responsibility of management to also do that key control assessment. So management should start to take over that responsibility. So for an audit committee to be effective, it's very important that there's also an ineffective internal audit section. And then we get to the independent insurance providers, where the first one is actually the portfolio committee and the oversight of the portfolio committee. So it's very important that the committee implements the commitments that I've just discussed before. It's very important that the portfolio committee focus on these audit outcomes through the oversight on a quarterly basis. Then there's also public accounts committee. Public accounts committee normally gets involved when there is qualified audit reports, or whether there's other very significant findings in the audit report that they want to deal with. And then lastly is external audit. So you'll see if you look at the chain, external audit is right at the back. It's very important that each and every role player before that executes its responsibility at that specific point in time to ensure that there's a positive audit outcome. Chairperson, I will hand over for any questions of clarity. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this presentation. And one actually would like to comment. The Auditor General for making sure that, you know, we comply. And also by always giving us guidance, even at the chairperson's level, so that we become more and more clear on issues that has to be, you know, checked. I must say that the one this time around feels that the department is coming from the worst, you know, time in terms of the performance. And for the fact that they were not able to get a qualified report, I think it's also an indication that they are moving, you know, gradually moving away and trying to make sure that they comply. However, I think the area of internal, you know, internal audit, I think it's very crucial. As you also indicated, that, you know, if the internal audit is not functioning, then the audit committee does not have what to do. And I think the department is here and is taking note of that. And we hope that the next time we meet with yourselves, things will have, you know, moved. They should have improved by then, because I think we should time and again be learning from our previous, occurrences, so that we don't repeat them. We don't repeat them. And the issue of quarterly statements, I know that you are encouraging them to, even though it's not constitutional, to give us the monthly statements, which of course will be of a great assistance to them and to us as well, because that is where we are able to track, you know, what is not going right at a very early stage, so that it can be corrected before they even come up with a quarterly statement. And we hope that the department have heard that, and we really would encourage them to work on that, because it even makes your work easier. Because come time of a quarterly report, you just put the monthly reports together. Okay, let me then afford the committee the opportunity to ask questions of clarity or comments. We know questions that belong to the Auditor General, and we know questions that belong to, and the department is not here to participate. We will get our time to box them if we want to box them, but not today. Honourable Member Banameva, Honourable Member Lahul, is that order?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think you are quite right to say that, of course, there has been improvements in some areas. There's no unauthorized expenditure, no fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I just wanted to get clarity, Aidy, from the AG's office. So I wanted to get clarity. If we look last year when they came to us at exactly the same time, these issues of supply chain management, internal audit, those were all the challenges. And they then launched a turnaround strategy to specifically address these issues. And with that, Treasury allocated additional funds for them to address these issues. So is it then safe to assume, if we've got exactly the same outcome, that there were no real progress in terms of these areas? Are the same findings of last year still there? I know that there's been slight improvements in some areas, but doesn't mean that the turnaround strategy which they launched 6 months ago, or a little bit more than that, a year ago, did not achieve the desired outcomes as we had hoped. And secondly, I was interested, for example, yesterday I was listening to the Auditor General give us, or the offer give us a report on the DFC. And they specifically highlighted with the SABC the issues of vacancies that are unfilled. And you didn't highlight that. And for example, this department has got 188 funded posts, but only 102 is filled. It's almost a 45% or something like that vacancy rate. You didn't flag that. Can I just get clarity as to why not? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that is my first one. My question is on full post. And surely all of us know that it does have an impact on the working of the department. I don't know, when I scrutinized the report of the department, I came across 6.1 million on irregular expenditure. It is currently under investigation. Can you elaborate more on that one? And then the internal audits for not having that done 100% in the department, the fingers always pinpoint to capacity in the department. That is really. Does that have anything to do with the skills or with not knowing what skills they have in the department, where people can be placed to rectify the situation? Because that was one of the issues that this committee spoke on continuously to the department. And all the recommendations in any case was scrutinized with the department, it was brought to their attention several times. My worry now is the same recommendation comes up again. They did not adhere to it. If I can perhaps just mention some reports that we requested and were told the very day of the 18th of last month that it will be with you in at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock the pudding will deliver. We only received on the 2nd of this month. So staying to set time frames, can you think that can really also be an issue in the department, and can that help the department to move forward? And then I do not know if it was an IT disaster or if it was unauthorized changes brought into the IT department, which I was told were done in the third year of establishment of the department. But when asked on the 11th of the 9th. Something very plain and simple, a list for donors in this department. The answer by the CFO, the newly appointed CFO, and the newly appointed DG was there is no record part in this department. There is no record on this that you're asking us. If you have any documentation, give it to us so that we can identify the situation. What is your view on that, and how then an unqualified service to be?
Thank you, dear person. I think the my understanding of the first question is that yes, there was some improvement in this environment. For instance, if you look at performance information improved from last year to this year, if you would also put the two audit reports next to each other, you would also see there are less non-compliance findings reported this year. So non-compliance is now basically in two areas, internal audit and supply chain management. Even in the supply chain management area, you can see that the irregular expenditure have reduced. So, therefore, yeah, it depends. You know, you can have one transaction where you didn't follow supply chain management, and it's 30 million rands, and then the figure will look different. Therefore, the focus should be on policies and procedures, training, implementation of policies and procedures, taking action against people who transgress. Consequence management, and then, like I say, the example which I explained, say, if you follow a supply chain management process, is to make sure that senior managers approve that transaction, make sure that the process has been followed before they actually approve the purchase order to go out. There's no specific reason why I didn't highlight the vacancy, but yes, there's a correlation between your control environment
and vacancies. It also depends in which areas the vacancies is. So I think it's clear, for instance, internal audit, the head of internal audit position was vacant, and I think it was filled in June or July, thereabout. So that's a key vacancy which had a significant impact, because you must first have your head of internal audit there before you can actually establish an internal audit unit, or as an alternative measure, you need to contract out your internal audit interim measure, or you can also look at a combination of having your head of internal audit and insourcing the resources. So that's a key vacancy. CFO position was vacant for some times, a CFO being appointed. Other key vacancies, supply chain management falls under the CFO, the financial statements falls under the CFO, so those are key vacancies. Some of the vacancies can have an impact on your service delivery program, some of them can have an impact on your day-to-day control. So yes, very important that funded vacancies should be filled to execute the mandate and for the control environment, because specifically in managerial positions, each of those individuals do have a responsibility to execute the day-to-day control. So vacancies and the filling of vacancies is indeed a key area that need to be addressed. The question about the internal audit and the skills audit is a bit more of a difficult one. It doesn't relate so directly to our focus. But I think what is important is that internal audit follows a risk-based audit approach as well. So if from the risk assessment there's an indication that there might be risk with regards to skills, then that can be a focus area for internal audit with the approval of the accounting officer and the audit committee. So it's a bit difficult for me to comment more than that on with regard to specific skills within the department. But it could be a risk area, and it could be something which, if the committee believes it's important, that the committee can focus on from an oversight point of view. With regard to IT and donor funding, on this one it could be a number of things. I don't think that the fact that the department could not provide a list of donors is directly related to the IT environment, because it could be more a record management issue. But although in the context of a list of donors, I think it's not probably purely flow of information. It's important that each and every entity must have a proper records management policy. And why that is important is to make sure that entities can retrieve important information within a reasonable period of time. You remember in the beginning of the presentation I said that in cases where entities cannot provide us with the information to substantiate the figures in the financial statements, it could render a disclaimer of an audit opinion. That is when entities are not able to provide us with the documentary evidence for what is in the financial statements or for the performance information, or to prove to us that they've been compliant with laws and regulations. So we don't have any of those findings in the audit report. But it does not mean that they may be it's not areas for improvement with regard to records management in other areas, like for instance the list of donors. If I remember correctly, in terms of the financial statements, there were no significant donor funding in the 2012-13 financial year. There were some donations, but not big significant donor funding which came with the donor agreement that I'm aware of. But the donations that were received in the financial statements that was part of the audit and that we've audited. Supposedly, if I missed anything.
The member seems to be pregnant with information and
I get an answer on the 6.1 regulation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, thank you, Honourable Member. Okay. With regard to the irregular expenditure that's under investigation, I think that is a question that the department would be in a better position to respond to. If you look at the financial statement, it's a requirement of the Public Finance Management Act that once, like I indicated earlier, it must be identified, it must be prevented, identified. Once identified, it must all be disclosed in the financial statements, and also the action that is taken must be disclosed in the financial statements. So normally these cases are at some point in time during the audit process, it's recorded as irregular expenditure, but still under investigation, and that is why the department would be better in a position to give feedback on what the investigation has been done, has anyone been held responsible, were there any consequences. But ultimately, from an oversight point of view, it's important to ensure that requirement of legislation is complied with, that it must be investigated and must be concluded on a case-by-case basis. It's not necessary to say that for each and every irregular expenditure, someone will be disciplined. One must the investigation of the accounting officer will look at the circumstances, but there must be final conclusion on each and every matter, and that is quite important. And then there's also a condonement process in terms of guidance from National Treasury on who can condone which irregular expenditure. Certain irregular expenditure can, after investigation, be condoned by the accounting officer, and other irregular expenditure can only be condoned by the National Treasury. So also very important to make sure that is a continuous process to investigate and either condone or to not condone, because one would try and avoid a situation where your irregular expenditure balance is just accumulating in your financial statements. And the longer you wait to investigate irregular expenditure, the more difficult it becomes. People leave the organization, documentation gets archived, so it's very important that process be followed as soon as possible.
Being paid by the four officials that left the employ of the department, and about 14 points some on performance bonuses. When the minister was asked the question in Parliament, we were told that it is a printing error. Now it still boggles my mind. I still don't understand that there was an order done. And I presume that the audit was done on what was presented to them by the department. Yet we find that in national parliament we can have an answer of printing error. Can you perhaps give us some clarity on that? Because I still don't understand. How does the budget balance if we have printing error? And never ever did we receive the correct figures.
Jefferson, I'm not aware of that specific incident. I will have to follow up and get back to you on that one. What can happen, but like I said, I don't have the information in this specific case. What sometimes happens is when we talk about printing errors is that we audit the set of financial statements and physically sign off on the final set of financial statements that we've audited. Then that set goes back to the department, and the department engages with the printer to print that set of financial statements. Sometimes what happens is that the printer might errors, and through the proofreading processes, it does not get picked up. It happens now and then, not an ideal situation. Normally, if it's material, entities will issue an errata to say, here's a new page to replace that specific page because of the following printing errors. I don't know, maybe the DG can give clarity on that one. I'm not aware of such an incident, but I will follow up on that. And if, yeah. It was on bonuses and
termination
of services. Okay. What's also important is and that's why it's important that I understand where it is in the annual report. The last part of the of the annual report normally contains a lot of information on human resources, and it's a lot of statistics are included in there. And if this is in that part of the report, that part of the report we do not audit at all. So we sometimes do pick up that the information in that part of the annual report contains errors. But that part of the financial, it shouldn't have errors, but it's not audited. I think it's just important to understand that the last part of the annual report we don't audit. And in fact, you will see that in the audit reports, we actually also clearly specify to say that in some cases, we actually clearly specify to say that if you look at paragraph 8 of the audit report, if the heading says unaudited supplementary schedules, and then we say the supplementary information set out on pages so and so does not form part of the audit. But we can engage that. I can try and clarify that point for you, Honourable Member.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The questions we are never able to address.
We are allowed to continuously, meet with you so that when we have issues, we want you to clarify that you are able to. Thank you very much, honorable members, and the AG. I think now we are going to be moving to the next session where we have FC. Yeah, they're supposed to be here at 11. Okay. In the meantime, you can take some tea.
What is the FC? The fiscal.
Oh yeah, something. Let me check.
This is the first one. Thank you. Because you're so early, you know, I don't really eat at all. that can come over.
Alors, tu viens à Robben Island après? Tu fais quoi? Ah, non.
It was funny this morning, the guy at the gift he saw that I was Dutch, so he asked if I wanted to have a
car. Oh, yeah.
And he didn't see he was my friend and he showed us the way.
Oh, okay, okay. Is that water for you? What are you guys playing in the afternoon?
Manua, release, I'm going to Rock Island.
Oh, yeah. Are you?
I'm going to work in some school. So needs to be done, so.
Yeah.
Because tonight I have debate at the university.
What are you doing?
Cater, are you
About?
I have your own conference.
Broad-based black economic empowerment.
Okay. Are you going to be
with all the students from our university and some professors from here?
Okay.
I think it's going to be interesting. Can you follow it?
I'm thinking to check my chair.
Oh, there is no.
Going.
Thank you. Do you want to put it here?
Yeah.
You want to give it me?
Okay.
Yeah.
What I'm gonna do?
Good morning, Chairperson and the honourable members of the Tutorial Committee. My name is Daniel Plagis, one of the commissioners of the Finance and Fiscal Commission. I've got two of the staff members with me. Khalid Dawood, who is the program manager, and Henry Extian, who is also in our Kitsam office. Chairperson, thank you very much for providing us with the opportunity to do this presentation. We are acutely aware that you're asking us to do a brief on the budget of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. It's inevitably is going to lead us into a discussion on the spending pattern, the trends and what we're learning from it. And then to be able to reflect where we can on some of the policy questions and interventions that need to be made. We've given you this morning a presentation which we managed to tweak in the sense of looking again at it and trying to ask the key questions as to the what and the why and the when, and ostensibly to try to deal with the matter of what are we supposed to achieve, how are we going to get there and how are we doing now, and how will we recognize whether we're doing good or bad in relation to this. I'm going to take you through the first two, three slides, and then I'm going to hand over to the program manager, and then we'll take some questions and answers. I'm assuming everybody's got copies of the minutes of the committee. We'll give you a quick snapshot on the role of the Finance and Fiscal Commission. We'll look at the financial performance, spending trends of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, reflect on non-financial performance of the department, what are the general findings, and then draw some of the on the recommendations that we've made. Before we plunge into that, I just want to confirm an apology from the other members of the financial other commissioners. We got a couple of meetings between Johannesburg and Cape Town and Pretoria, and as you know, Chairperson, it's the month of MTBBS and adjustments, and we're all trying to do our utmost to do presentations to the various legislatures and other stakeholders. Also an apology for being late. We got hold up in a positive way by the Portfolio Committee on Health. And you will probably be interested that there are questions that they raise in relation to primary health care, in particular as a key program to intervene in terms of social transformation and human resource development within our country. Just to quickly, Chairperson, to confirm, the Finance and Fiscal Commission is a Section 220 of the Constitution. Our mandate in particular is to make recommendations in terms of Chapter 13 of the Constitution, national legislation to Parliament, and to the provincial legislatures and other organs of state. We also reflect in terms of legislative provisions or executive decisions, especially those that impacts on the competency, role, and other functions of provincial and local governments. We also look at regulations that might find its way in terms of further creeps in terms of legislation with the regulations rises, create other pressures which is not part of the main part of the founding legislation, and how that actually impacts on the Finance and Fiscal Commission. On the question of women, we find that unemployment rate for women is 5.4% higher than the national unemployment rate for men. Adults aged 25 years and above with no formal schooling, the highest among African women, at standing at 14.8%, close to 15%. On children, what our data shows is that 6 in every 10 children live in homes with a monthly income less than 575 per person. More than or around 85% of young children in hospital die from malnutrition. On people with disabilities, it's about 0.8 of the total workforce in a year ago. In fact, 2 years ago, 11-12, and it's a very slight decline of 0.03. Not looking good at all, relative to the target that was set by national government of a 2% of the workforce in 2005. There's a number of functional and structural matters related to that, and if we get to that point, we will deal with that if in terms of your questions. So just to confirm, the National Development Plan calls for protection and advancement of the rights of women, children and people with disabilities, and specifically NDP proposes, or rather suggests, that we need to look at access to the labour market for women through secure tenure and public employment schemes. That this particular department which you are politically having oversight over, and legislatively chairperson, and the Gender Commission to set indicators, and there should be consideration for reporting annually on the status of women in South Africa. There's the whole question of access to antiretroviral trials by women for especially 16 years and older. Children, and on children question, there's a need to look at improve the quality of education and 2 years compulsory preschool education, rather 2 years compulsory preschool education. Social protection and support for orphans affected by HIV and AIDS is a critical matter that the report raises. And then there's always the need to on people with disabilities to, I would say, to enhance and solidify access to quality education and employment, integrated in all planning. And part of our thinking is that in the LSC that we need to find ways to respond to that. Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to, with your permission, to Khalid Dawood, which will take us through the other parts of the presentation. If that's in order with you. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. As we know, just to give run the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. Previously, the department was a unit within the presidency in the Office of the Special Projects. The department itself was established in 2009, although it only started functioning as a standalone department in November 2010, mainly due to a lack of capacity on the part of the department. In terms of the purpose of the department, essentially attempts to advance, develop and protect the rights of women, children and people with disabilities through mainstreaming, lobbying, advocacy, awareness raising, empowerment and mounting compliance in government and all relevant sectors. So really the purpose of the department is one of leadership, given the fact that there are other departments that also perform aspects or perform certain functions with regard to these particular stakeholder groups, specifically the Department of Social Development. The department has four main programs, administration, women empowerment, children and people with disabilities. Chair, I've indicated that the core functions, one of advocacy and awareness raising, making sure that the various policy proposals by different spheres of government are implemented and announcing the implementation of those policy proposals. Now moving on to the progression of the budget, going back to 2009-2010 when the department started as a standalone department, we note here that over the period of 2009-2012-2013, there has been an annual real growth rate of 31% per annum. This is taking into consideration inflation. In other words, once we take out inflation out of the equation, on an annual basis from 2009-2010 to 2012-2013, the department was spending increased by about 31%. Of the various programs, the most significant increases are located in the administration department program and the rights of people with disabilities. And that is largely, in terms of administration, that is largely to capacitate the department so that they are able to operate on as a standalone department. Over the MTF, we note that there's a 1.7% real growth rate. So in other words, once we have accounted for inflation, the department's actual purchasing power is increasing by 1.78% over the MTF period. Once again, the major cost driver is to be found within the administration, and that is largely to continue building capacity within the minister's office, and then also to provide accommodation that is needed for the deputy minister. Now, in terms of the administration program, we note that the major cost driver there is in terms of capacitating the department with reference to supply chain as well as finance function going forward. Now, when we look at the prioritization of spending from 2009-2010 onwards, we note that the share of the budget that has been allocated to administration has increased quite rapidly from 2009-2010. And at the same time, we see that the share of the budget allocated to women empowerment declines quite significantly over that period as well. And that is really because the expenditure rate of increase in administration rose much faster than the women empowerment over that period. Also at the same time, despite the relative fall in share, women empowerment still remains the largest service delivery program at 42% over the MTA period. And this is mainly due to transfer payments that are transferred to the Commission on Gender Equality, which comprises 78% of the program expenditure in 2012-2013. Now, when we look at the shares of the budget that's allocated to children, rights, and people with disabilities, as the Commission, we are asking whether the department should perhaps re-examine whether the merits of keeping children's rights and disabilities as two separate programs on its budget structure is still valid, especially in light of the fact that the staff complement for each program is relatively small. For example, there are 8 staff located within the children program and 10 staff within the disabilities program.
And also the functional assignment within each program is also the same. Moving on to the line item spending for the department, we note that the compensation of employees decreased on average between 2009-10 and 2012-13 by 89% per annum in real terms. This is really to capacitate the department so that they are able to fulfill their mandate as a standalone department. Quite importantly, previously the presidency used to perform all of the administrative functions for the department, with the establishment of the new department, all of the administrative functions had to be filled. The increases for goods and services, it increased by 47% over the past previous 4 years. But over the MTF period, we see that there's going to be a minus 1% per annum decline. And the reason for that is that the department is reallocating resources from non-core spending activities within goods and services to capacitating the department within the compensation within the administration program. The major cost drivers for goods and services, are travel and subsistence, property payments, and venues and facilities. It is proper that these should be the cost drivers specifically because the department is has to consult with quite the various stakeholders therefore engagement with different stakeholders and conducting workshops is crucial for the performance of the department's function. With regard to the travel and subsistence costs, when we need disaggregated the amount, we noted that the reason for the substantial increase is largely because of increase in foreign travel expenses, which increased from 3.9 million in 2011-2012 to 9.9 million in 2012-2013, largely to fulfill international commitments that the department has. With regards to property payments, this is due to an increase in office accommodation for Deputy Minister's office. And then, although venues and facilities represent the third largest cost item of communication, in the financial statements, there's no explanatory note which actually explains the breakdown of costs for this particular line item. Moving on to the transfers to the Commission for Gender Equality Chair, we note that there's an increase in the real terms of 1% over the MT period, largely due to improved conditions of service. There's also an increase for capital assets from 2010-11 onwards, and that is largely for office furniture and to capacitate the department as a standalone department. Now, one of the things that we noted, Chair, was that there is a disjunction in some of the figures in terms of what is in the estimates of national expenditure and what is reported within the annual financial statements. For example, in 2012-2013, we note that amount of 15 million rand for property rates is reported within the estimates of national expenditure. But when we look at the amount recorded in the annual financial statements, we note it's only 8.43 million rand. Now, that's quite a significant difference, and there's no explanation provided either in the estimates of national expenditure or the financial statements of why there is this substantial discrepancy between these two amounts. Moving on to the line item share of the total expenditure, we note that that there's been a decline in the share of transfers and subsidies between 2009 and 2012-13, which is offset by an increase in compensation of employees and goods and services. As we previously explained, the department moved to a standalone department. Over the MTF period, though, this trend tends to even out with transfers and subsidies the second largest line item at 31% over the MTF period. Also importantly, goods and services decline, as we indicated earlier, while share on compensation of employees increases. As we previously explained, the department reallocates spending from spending items such as travel and subsistence to build the capacity within the department. Chair, looking at the in-year spending profile for the department, for the past three financial years, what we noticed is that the department has improved considerably in 2012-2013 compared to the previous two years, where erratic spending disbursements most likely affected the department's cash management processes. We concluded that the reason for this is most likely because of better cash flow planning. Although when you look at the spending profile, there is a small spike in spending that is still observable in March of 2012-2013. That is something that the department should perhaps have a look at. Moving on to the performance information of the department. This is the performance information that the department reported within the annual report. What we note, Chair, is that the department has not performed very well besides the Children's Rights and Responsibilities Program in terms of meeting their targets. We note, for example, that the rights of people with disabilities only achieved 37.5% of the target, and total performance targets achieved only 69% achieved. We're also to emphasize that when we examine the performance information of the department, the quality of the information also makes it very difficult for one to know to what extent the department achieved the target or did not achieve the target, especially since the reporting is done in a very generic sense. One wonders whether the department actually has proper performance information systems in place which actually collects information and reports on this particular information consistently. And that could explain the reason why the internal audit unit, for example, did not submit a regular report with regards to performance information to the audit committee. Chair, when we look at the spending performance of the department, in other words, for 2012-2013, to what extent did the department spend its budget? We note once again that the spending performance of the department has been less than adequate. The best performance department spent 97% of its budget, which is women empowerment and gender equality, compared to children's rights and responsibilities, which only spent 70% of its budget. The explanation provided by the department was that there are critical posts that have not been filled, and also rental payments for additional office space have not been affected. But this is something that needs closer scrutiny so that we understand exactly where the department is actually struggling in terms of spending its budget. Quite importantly, underspending took place in all of the programs, not in a specific program. So there seems to be a across-the-board problem within the department in terms of monitoring the implementation of its budget. And on this point, Chair, I would just like to point out that within the performance information, although they have got targets that relate to spending according to their budget, it's been reported as being achieved. Although we look at the information that we've got in front of us, we can clearly see that the department did not spend the full extent of its budget. Moving on to unauthorized expenditure, we note that there's an amount of 25.1 million rand of unauthorized expenditure in 2011-2012, which has not yet been condoned by the department. Although for 2012-2013, on a positive note, the department did not incur any unauthorized expenditure. Looking at irregular expenditure, we note that an amount of 35.5 million of irregular expenditure has been incurred for 2011-2012. Although there are no explanations provided in the annual report of the department of what was the reason for this particular irregular expenditure. Nevertheless, the department does report that there are investigations that are underway, especially with regard to 6.1 million rand of irregular expenditure which was incurred in 2012-2013. Now, the Auditor General The department received an unqualified audit in both 2011-2012 and 2012-2013, which implies that the financial statements clearly represent the financial performance of the department. In other words, the reporting of the financial information was of a good quality. Nevertheless, the AG did draw attention to certain specific matters, especially with regard to the internal audit function, which did not, for example, submit a strategic plan, and it also records that detailed performance were not submitted as well to the audit committee. There was also no evaluation in terms of the effectiveness and efficiency of controls, as well as the integrity of financial information. Chair, we feel that this particular function is quite crucial if the department is going to improve on its spending performance going forward. With regard to procurement and contract management, we know that this is something that the Minister of Finance has raised in his budget speech at the beginning of February, especially with the establishment of the Office of the Procurement Officer. And therefore, with regard to this, we note that the department has a value of 500,000 that was not obtained without any price quotations. And in some instances where quotations were received, they were received without a tax method of suppliers being in place. Moving on to the recommendations which the FSC has made in the past 2 years, the FSC has been done quite a substantial amount of work in the area of gender as well as children, and recently we tabled a report in Parliament on the funding and provision of child welfare services, which you may know about, Jane. But just to take you through the recommendations that we've made, with regard to gender, we have stated that there needs to be assessment of gender responsive budgeting in the local government sphere, and we've made a number of recommendations relating to how this can be achieved at the national, provincial, as well as local government sphere. Within the recent submission on the division of revenue, the Financial and Fiscal Commission calls for the progressive realization of a child support system, and in this regard we feel that this should happen even within the context of fiscal consolidation which is currently taking place that government is currently implementing at the moment. Now, in terms of that, we feel that government should move faster towards consolidating the various social protection instruments. With regards to this, we are referring to the child support grant, the foster child grant, the unemployment, the UIF, as well as the social wage, as part of the last standing reform of social security system, because of the significant effects that this has on reducing child poverty. Moving on to the recommendations here we've made with regard to the provision and funding of child welfare services. There are quite a number of recommendations that we have made, but I will just pull out the ones that relate to finances, specifically for the purposes of this presentation. We know that funding to NGOs have declined over the past 2 years, and they are struggling to provide services to children, as well as to other beneficiaries as well. And what we have called for is that there should be a financing plan that government should put in place to move towards the full funding of minimum norms and standards for the sector going forward. Also, at the same time, we are calling for an agreement between the government and NGOs on what the funding principles should be, so that is improved transparency in the grant system. NGOs have often complained that they are not sure on what basis the departments allocate funding to NGOs, and it's important for government and NGOs to understand what are the basis of funding allocations so that there is better understanding as well as transparency in the system. A second recommendation that we have made with regard to this is that the delays in the disbursement to NPLs should be eliminated. This is causing severe cash flow problems to NPLs, which is affecting the services that they can provide to children. Also, the Auditor General found in 2010-11 that the Department of, and this doesn't specifically pertain to social development, but rather to the sector as a whole, that, and with regards to this Department of Social Development, that there were maladministration, specifically in terms of management, wanting an oversight of the work of NPOs. And with regards to this, DFFC has called for the entire value chain in the transfer system to be audited so that we are able to identify the bottlenecks and inefficiencies, simplify the administrative systems, and standardize across provinces. Just to move on to the fourth recommendation, Chair, currently there are funding disparities between provinces and different regions. So if you are you'd rather refer to be a vulnerable child in the Gauteng or the Western Cape than, for example, in KwaZulu-Natal, largely because you'll probably receive better quality services than in those provinces because of lack of proper prioritization and because of historical underspending in those particular provinces as well. And with regards to that, here we are calling for standardization of funding per child that is in line with minimum norms standards across all provinces to reduce existing funding disparities. And then finally, just to move on to the last recommendation, which is recommendation 9, we know that there are certain child welfare indicators that are not reported in a consistent way. Also, the quality of these indicators are quite poor, and sometimes it's very difficult to actually measure them. This makes it quite difficult to monitor the implementation of child welfare services, which has relevance for this particular department. And with regard to this, we are calling for standardization of a limited number of indicators across the sector departments which NPOs must report on, and that there should be one system for reporting and monitoring these indicators that should be introduced that is simple to use and can be applied in all of the provinces. That brings me to the conclusion of the presentation, and I hand over to our commissioner to you, sir. Okay.
Chairperson, just to add that the reason why we didn't touch on the Auditor General's part slide is our understanding that the Auditor General was here this morning, and it would probably just be a repetition, but I think it's a good thing we have it in here because it needs the currency on why the interventions are required with regard to this department. And just to say that there is probably a need to from your side to based on the recommendations here to be able to consider putting pressure on this department, social development, health, and yes, the Treasury to find ways not only of soft advising on the mainstreaming in the budgets of women, children, and people with disabilities, but to find concrete ways of demonstrating where the interventions are made with regard to either programs and budgets in a way, and there's a need to look at that. On that, Chair, thanks very much. We await your question.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think actually especially after the Auditor General's presentation as well, and then you coming there after, I think it actually equips members in a sense that it is making aware of the area where sometimes one thought that, you know, areas are not always being there, you know. The area of I just want to talk on one issue which was raised earlier, I think, by some of my members here. The, you know, this amount unauthorized of 25.1. I know that it's not a question put forth to you because there is a relevant department that will respond to you. Actually, this was in 2011, 2012, and the regular expense as well of 2011, 2012, of 55.5, which I think we need to change it up with the department. Because it's the one that we need to explain to us, because we're talking and asking ourselves whether it does, how does it affect, you know, the current, financial year. If it's still ending here, whether it's going to be written off or not by the national program, but I think that's a question to be responded to by the department when we meet with them tomorrow. I think they are really loaded. But without wasting a lot of time, let me allow the committee members to engage. Honorable Banameve, Honorable Lamour, for now.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Commission. I think they really did a very good job in this document. I would like to say that I share the sentiments around NGOs and non-profit organizations. I think it's something that I've really highlighted in the National Assembly before and as a committee, that the state is expecting these organizations to do a valuable service on the behalf, yet they struggle for funding on a daily basis. And I think going forward, it's really something that we have to champion as a committee to bring all the stakeholders together, social development and other departments, to ensure that we actually fight for adequate funding for NGOs. I wanted to ask just a quick question. If you look, you say on slide 5, you talk about the rise in travel and subsistence, which has gone up from 3.9 to 9.9, and this is largely due to the foreign travel expenses. And you said it's because of South Africa's international obligations, which I fully understand. But for a department with such a small budget, don't you think that amount is excessive? And also, don't you think that this is probably got to do with the size of delegations that go overseas? If you can maybe just share your thoughts on that for me. And I would think I would stop there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
I like the manner in which the report to articulate your report and do it. I share the sentiments. I think the feasibility study needs to be done on the means relating to drawing and painting of children that's spoken in one of your slides. I remember I did my film on that one, but the answer was a feasibility study was done, and I'm very well aware of that. But it's also, are we dedicating? What are we dedicating? How can we get away from this? My question is, on the old slide on the 10, and I think it's just for clarity. The property rate that is being paid by the department, last year it was the amount of 6 million, and it is, as we have now, come down, but 8.14 million is only recorded. I'm not clear on it. Is it in the contract of the department to pay the property rate? Is it because it is commercial buildings that they're using? Is it expected of them to pay the property rate, or is it what is in your contract that you need to adhere to? If you can just clarify that. Am I clear on that one? Thank you.
Thank you, David Wilson. I would say that this probably to respond to Honorable Van Merwe's question on the need to expand the financial support to the non-profit sector. There's probably a need to differentiate between strategy services and non-strategy services. Because strategy services creates an obligation on the state to provide and to intervene. And where it can't, it uses non-profit organization, in particular in the welfare field, where they do canalization of services. Social workers in particular do that. And they then provide those services on behalf of government. And I think there's a need to for the various departments that utilize these institutions relative to the mandate of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities to be able to look at what is strategy services. On the non-strategy services part, that's where the contestation needs to be resolved. I don't think it's as clear as what Parliament has been struggling with for the last almost 20 years, if you like. I think there's a need to find ways to be able to work out what non-strategy services should government invest in. And what will be the return on investment for the public, and in particular for women, children, and for people with disabilities. And also to be able to look at what the nature of those services. Because just to plunge into non-strategy services, my experience working in the non-profit sector, through government, through universities, back into the non-profit sector, is you get these, back into government and back into the university sector, is that many of the institutions, because of our very open macroeconomic policy, it allows for institutions just to one-man show, one-woman shows, and institutions that doesn't necessarily have the public good at heart. So my view would be, Chairperson, that I would be cautious, but I would be optimistic too. But they need to find a resolve on what constitutes a non-strategy service which this government has to consider investment. And obviously the returns on communities, children, people with disability, households, and just a total contribution on building social infrastructure and creating work opportunities. So I think, and I'm saying strategy, yes, non-strategy, I think we need to be optimistic, but we need to be cautious, and then we can define what we're talking about. So if you're, and I know many, Chair, if I can just use this platform, but many of our honourable members in Parliament are always wanting the non-profit sector to be supported, and money to be pumped into this, whether in education, whether in health, whether in welfare, whether in an advisory office, etc., etc. If government can't see how it contributes to building social infrastructure, relative to building the NGO into the administration cost in that, because those need to be juxtaposed to each other. Notwithstanding, there is a need to find ways of supporting the third sector. But we need to think about it, how we do that. Can I move from there and quickly respond on the property rates matter? Honourable Lamola Mara?
Yeah.
I think you need to ask the department that. The department would know far better than us in relation to the property rate spending and how it connects to buildings or to other elements in it. And you might ask the department there's a end user education problem that we have here. The department might be able to tell you exactly what are the efficiencies within it and non-efficiencies on the property rate spending. We can't answer that. It's too obscure. You need to probably to raise that again there. On the overspend, on the point that was raised, because I've discussed this morning with Khalid, and my question is, why do you make an issue of this one, or why don't you make an issue of this one? Why are you raising it? And for me it was, again, this particular question, you need to level at the department, which is highlighting it for you. And part of leveling at the department is to be able to see on the investment that was made for people to travel, what was the traveling about? What is the returns for the citizens of this country and for government on those travels? Was it about, if it's about the bilateral agreements, in particular the UN agreements that we have for those international institutions, then you need to search for the justifiable element which suggests to you here's an efficient spending relative to a non-efficient spending. This thing is needed because of the obligations that we have. Because international traveling has got a number of permutations to it. Depending where you are, you're seeing it differently. International travel can either be professional tourism, if you like. while I have the phone, it runs across the system. Parliamentarians also go, with all due respect. Officials go. And we need to be able to see exactly now, what does this mean in relation to the work that needs to be done at this particular department. I would venture to say, are involved in a number of international agreements. But that needs to be measured against the international agreement relative to that. Then on how many should go on these dates, it's a matter that only the department can explain to you. Because in many instances, these travels has got to do with I would venture to say it's got to do with solidifying the standing of South Africa relative to the rest of the world, whether it's on a continent or whether it's in international agreements. But it's also got to do with South Africa influencing what needs to happen. There are two components to it invariably. The one component is the political office in terms of travel, and there's the administration, the DG or acting DGs, and the staff. And it would be quite an interesting exercise if you can do it to be able to determine what is the apportioning of the spending and what is the distribution to people that goes. And whether there's been reports to it and whether those reports actually helps in order for the department to understand its legislative mandate, if you like, but also to understand what is the strategic programs all about. I think you need to do that. Our view is basically you ask us to do a presentation on the department's in, and this is what we're picking up. In fact, if you didn't get it from the Auditor General, then you just need to get it from the department. We can't give you a particular view on that. It's just not fitting within our particular responsibilities. Is there an overspend on it? There's been a growth in spending, but we can't tell you if there's an overspend. So you need to be able to tell what's the standard of measure in terms of spending relative to the returns, the spending relative to the numbers of people that has gone on these trips, and the spending relative to the commitments. And on the basis of that, you would be able to make up. But is there nothing you need to? In fact, I'm helping you with the type of questions you can ask the department. You need to ask them that. We can't give you that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Commissioner. I think this is a new right. I think this is at the department. But in your presentation, you said very little in terms of persons with disability. And I just want to ask, what would you suggest the government regarding the non-compliance by many government departments of this 2% tariff? And then secondly, you spoke about the gender responsive targets. What about children, parents with disability? With regards to that responsive parity.
And lastly, I just want to ask this for interest's sake. You know, the scholar transport. Scholar transport. Who's responsible? Is it the basic education or transport department?
Thank you, Jefferson. We'll share the load, and the officials can answer those, and then we'll see whether they've done the right thing, to see whether they've earned their, in an efficient way, their funds that they're getting and the salary packages. When I was talking about the three departments giving much more harder advice on what needs to be done, I was in actual fact referring to all three the population groups which this department is responsible for. So it is, yes, on women and children and on people with disabilities. What is very interesting, Chair, which I know we've done it, and I say we, when I was working in the Treasury at the time, and I was still much younger, we tried to do with an NGO, because I don't know whether it still exists, a children's budget, which ostensibly was pulling all programs and funding geared towards children between the age of 0 to 18, which then will give you a consolidated view of the nature of investment that's been made on children in this country. And somewhere or the other, I haven't been seeing that for the last 5 years. I might not have read the right stuff, but I haven't seen it. Similarly, I thought I saw some years ago on the women's budget, where there are lots of disputes around how people pull it together because of the aggregation and disaggregation of the financing arrangements and the difficulty of getting money out of it, and the same with persons with disabilities. I would suggest that if you want to get far more harder data on these, and it seems to me it's conceivable to ask the Human Rights Commission to be able to provide you with that type of information. It seems to me conceivable that you need to ask the Jane Commission probably to come provide you with that type of information. And then it's probably a long-range matter that we could probably say that it could be a matter that the FSC needs to consider within the next cycle. As a critical matter to be considered on that. I think the 2% is really a problem in terms of reaching the 2%, because we just spoke to the health portfolio committee. If you ask me then, as a commissioner, I'll probably say to you, I would never have put the target at 2%, but that's the target that was set. I think what needs to happen is a different gear. You need to change the paradigm on how departments account for delivering against the 2% or not. I would advise you, because it will also help us in many ways and help the citizens of this country, and clearly you're part of the citizens and the politicians of this country, that if you could ask departments to set in no uncertain terms the hard targets that they will implement in relation to a realization of 2%. I think in many instances the 2% in relation to department is very soft. It's like what you'll find in any of our institutions. You set a target for them to deal with the racial disparities of the past, especially in my former college and universities. You'll say, okay, we've appointed, we've met the target of appointing black academics, African women and men and colored Indian Africans, but you dig deeper Yeah, I actually discovered that those black academics is actually not South Africans. It's basically mean they've reached your target. If you ask for the target, they've reached it. But if you ask for the target specifically to the South African population, they haven't reached the target. And that's the obscurity of it. So my view would be, from a commission's perspective, is that you need to ask each department in this country, its level of government, to give you concrete targets, achievable targets over the years, probably over the next 1 to 2 years. I don't know. You need to decide on that. Exactly what are those concrete targets you're going to achieve to be able to deal with the 2%. Now, you're probably going to get the matter of there's infrastructural changes that need to be made. Correctly so. People say there's infrastructural changes that need to be made. The RANs and other forms of assistive devices within departments. But that shouldn't be a matter of bothering. It should be a matter of tell us, we said what we need to achieve is 2%. You tell us how is your department going to get there. And the three questions that I normally ask the person is, what are we supposed to achieve? Is this the 2%? How are we going to get there? How we know that we're there? And what are we doing now? And I think that's the matter on the 2%. And it's been going on for some time, and I know the politicians are pulling their whatever head that some of you have left, if you as my old age, there's no way to put on the 2%. So I think we need to ask those harder questions on it. On the scholar, Khalid will respond to you, Chairperson.
Okay, just to mention that on the scholar transport, the Financial and Fiscal Commission did do a project on scholar transport a few years back and made recommendations with that regard. I speak under the correction whether it is under basic education, but I'm sure that people here will be able to confirm whether it is or not. We can definitely make those recommendations available that we've made with regard to scholar transport for this committee.
Any other? That seems that the six members are satisfied with the information that they have given. I must say, it's a lot of information, and it's actually going to assist the committee also when it engages in the department and other departments as well, not only in the department.
As soon as you want to see us, too. How's that?
Thank you very much. That's quite a little one. Thank you, and thank you, Honorable Mayor, and our minister for today.
So I think the idea was to work with members for wherever you are working across the country.
Yeah.
And because there's three of us, Andy's, Andre, Vivier's from UNICEF, who will come in to link the member with the group of children and an NGO. But the idea is not to just talk to children, hear their stories and leave, but to have an NGO to support the issues that come up and so that there's continued relationship in terms of matters that may arise. So what I will do is I will need to hear from members, whether it's your constituency or your province, please give an indication of that area which you are keen to look at, what your issue is, and then you need to set up a timetable between now and the end of November to see on what day will you be available, and then I'll link up with Andre from UNICEF so that he links up with an NGO, and there will be preparation beforehand. So, for example, if the issue is substance abuse in Malaysia, and that is on all the BB's key infrastructure concerns, between Crystal, Renzo and myself, would be one of the three of us who would work with that member and say, okay, if that is your key area of interest, Andre found this NGO, and on Monday afternoon, on the 21st of October, at 3 o'clock, he can bring a group of 6 children together. We will come up with a set of questions and look at how we begin from the member focus on the member engaging with children. The member would then engage with the children and ask, is substance abuse an issue in your area? What seems to be the problem? The idea about these engagements for each member is for us to work creatively. Ideally, we want to do more work with our children the last term, but the time is very limited. So this is still part of committee work to relate to your mandate. Out of that engagement, one, whoever supports us is, we will look at writing a report, and those issues can be consolidated for all the members that we brought to the committee. And then at the end of this period, there's an opportunity to say, across different areas and constituencies, these are the issues that came up. UNICEF is also prepared to look at an opportunity to bring some of those children together from the various constituencies in a broader discussion with members to say, well, how do we begin to take some of these issues forward? In terms of Parliament side, I've liaised with media and communications. They're also keen to capture how members are going to be engaging with children and taking up issues because it's part of an activist parliament. So there's an opportunity across where you set up these times for the media from Parliament to come out and document and see how you're doing so that they can also write the story in terms of this portfolio committee's mandate is in relation to children. This is how they're engaging with children and children's issues. And this is how they're dealing with it. So in terms of process, what I will do is between today and tomorrow is to speak to members and find out your area of interest, your constituency, or area across the country, and then we'll need to set up a timetable and I'll liaise with you who will be the support of person going with you and who would be the NGO. But the idea is we want to do more work around children in June 2030. Time hasn't been with us, but there's an opportunity to work with you during your constituency and still bring those issues back to committee, back to Parliament, and refer that on. So in the cases around issues of drug abuse and rehab, whatever issues come up there and we write reports, we can still pass that on some information on either to the Select Committee on Social Services or the Portfolio Committee on Social Development or to our own department if there's a direct matter that relates to our department's mandate.
For when,
We got a political approval to basically do this work during your constituency, so basically from now till the end of November. It will probably maybe run to the beginning of December, because...
15 days,
yes. Yeah.
But what should we do? Chief, if I can come in there, you must remember that we have policy in our ECF period. We have party work to do, especially with the registration campaign coming in November. And then on NGOs, you know, and that is why it is of critical importance for us to do something about NGOs. NGOs are falling apart, and we all know, we're working on the ground, that they are the implementers of legislation, and a very big percentage of legislation are implemented by them. I think what is wrong with NGOs is that there is no clear criteria on how they need to operate. A yearly financial report, the annual meeting, you know, their performance during the year. Nobody is monitoring or evaluating that, giving them any assistance. Those people are, many of them are on their own, and they really do study work. And I talked to Mr. Plaky now,
and Little 2 on this matter, that we still feel that in the funding for NGOs must be reviewed. Something must be done to that. Now, to get an NGO to continuously work with those children is the problem, is a challenge.
No,
because there will be issues pertaining to NGOs that they will have to implement once these children, once the issues surrounding these children are cleared out, okay? They will have to assist these children in some way or another. And that is the only thing that's worrying me.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members.
Hey members,
the first document we're going to be looking at is the analysis
of the annual report. Lorenzo and myself will be going through that. On the first page is just an outline of what the paper will be dealing with. So it's looking at the department's budget and programmatic targets, and also looking at the department's operating environment in relation to governance and human resource issues. So on the first page, there's just outlining the mission and mandate of the department and the strategic objectives. The only thing that I have to point out with regard to the strategic objectives is that those listed in the annual report are different to the ones that they present to us when they presented their strategic plan in April last year. So it's not that the strategic focus is different. It's still the same, but they've changed the wording and some of the objectives between April last year and what they presented in the annual report this year. I think the question there is just why is there a difference in the strategic goals and objectives in presented in the strategic plan and those in the annual report, and whether this has impact on the department's ability to deliver on its mandate. If we go over to the operating environment on page 2, I think a lot of what I'm going to be saying is also covered by this morning's presentations by the AG and the SFC. I'm not going to go into everything that's written there, because some of it has already been covered. Firstly, if we look at the human resource issues, as indicated this morning also, the department has a total of 188 approved posts, of which 102 were filled during the period under review. I think the important thing to note is that the bulk of employees are in the administration program, and that's something that members have continually pointed out in relation to the department. They indicate in their report that they have a ratio of 2.6 to 1 between support and core functions. So for every one person in the core program, for every one person in the core program, there's 2.6 persons in the administration program. And that obviously impacts on service delivery in those core programs, which are already understaffed as is. So also then the majority of employee expenditures in the administration program at 43.4 million, and that amounts to 71% of the total personnel expenditure. And if you look at the personnel costs by salary band, 56.3% of personnel costs are spent on the senior and top management level, and 16.5% spent on level 9 to 12, which is your highly skilled supervision position. In terms of staff turnover for the year, 19% left the department in 2012-13. The majority, or a total of 7 persons resigned, 6 were dismissed due to misconduct, and 5 were transferred to other departments. In terms of those who were dismissed, the reasons are follows: either for financial misconduct, the dereliction of duty and gross misconduct, performance or unauthorized administrative work, negligence and dishonesty, and failure to declare a criminal record. And that's on page 82 of the annual report. I think importantly this morning, the AG indicated that there's a need for training and development within the department. And looking at skills and development opportunities that the department has provided, there's a bit of a concern there. Out of looking at the table provided in the annual report, out of 152 skill programs and other short courses that were identified by employees, the department only provided 43 training opportunities. So that's of concern. And although it also hasn't established an employee assistance program as yet. They also indicate that in terms of the current structure, they will be submitting a redesigned structure and related post establishment to the Minister of Public Service Administration for agreement. So we just need to know, first in terms of that redesign, whether that's been approved, and if it has, will the department have the necessary budgetary allocation to cover for that? And then in terms of vacancies, what mechanisms have the department employed for vacancies, particularly those in core programs? In terms of staff retention, what measures have they put in place to see to that? And by when do they intend in finalizing and implementing outstanding HR policies and processes? And also they have a prioritized funding, training and development opportunities for staff. Looking at governance 3.2 there, the important thing was also from the AG in terms of internal audit function that's not fully operational and effective. So the department reports that during the period of the review, they were able to improve corporate governance by reducing non-compliance with the PFMA. Now, reducing non-compliance with the PFMA is not, I think, something to be proud of this year as an achievement, because you should be complying with the PFMA in totality, not reducing the level of non-compliance. And they also indicate that they set up various systems of risk for risk management, namely the internal audit unit. As indicated this morning by the aid, also that unit is experiencing capacity constraints, and that has impact on information and assurance reports submitted to the audit committee. The audit committee highlights the lack of an adequate strategic risk register and has appealed to management to ensure that a proper risk assessment is undertaken within the department. And just as I put there, it's also indicated by the AG, who highlights that a lack of adequate leadership and governance has constraints which have impact on compliance with the laws and regulations and the evidence of irregular expenditure within the department. So key questions under governance is then that the department indicates that they've managed to reduce non-compliance. What are they doing to ensure that they comply fully? And what measures or mechanisms have they employed to mitigate identified risks, in particular in relation to the audit, I would say. Lorenzo will go through the financial performance information.
Okay, good afternoon, members, once again. In relation to the financial performance, the budget for the 2012 and 13 financial year for the department was 192, close to 193 million rand. As pointed out this morning by SSC and the AG, they've only spent close to 180 million of that budget, which means an under expenditure of about 12, close to 13 million. So if you look on page 5, members, there's a similar table that the SSE did to in their presentation as well, basically highlighting the final appropriation per program together with what they actually spent. And then also they see that there's an under-expenditure for each program. Now, the positive point, once again, is that the department didn't incur overspending, unlike the previous financial year, where they incurred about 22 or 23 million rand over expenditure. At the same time, it's also critical for the department to actually spend all the money that it wants, that has been allocated to it, because the department is the one who submitted the proposal to Treasury and to Parliament, and we appropriated according to what they submitted and had a vote on it. And the department gave some reasons for under-expenditure. The FFT spoke about it this morning as well. And under each program, I've highlighted those reasons for administration, the WEDGE program, the children's rights and responsibilities, and the rights of persons with disabilities. So a trend we can see throughout those four programs are that there's always been one in relation to vacancies, that weren't filled throughout, which is a reason why they haven't spent or underspent for all those programs. In relation to goods and services, I mentioned some. For example, with the CRR program, they said that there are delays in appointing a service provider for editing, design, and printing of the UN and the AU country reports. And under disability, they also mentioned that in relation to goods and services, they had an under-expenditure of 600,000 due to delays in the appointment of a service provider to conduct baseline studies on public servants, students in public universities, and learnership programs for people with disabilities. Now, these justifications that they have given is actually not sufficient, because it's actually within your mandate as what you are supposed to be doing. So you have funded vacancies which you need to fill and you haven't filled, and you have work that needed to be done which you haven't done. You haven't given us a reason as to why the work hasn't been done, which was a bit of a concern. So. And I think that's important to note. Some questions for consideration that I thought of there could be, for example, how are they going to deal with the deficit of the previous financial year, where they actually overspent 22.71 million rand, and what is the plan to actually deal with that? And then also, on what basis can we as the portfolio committee, in making our breach of our recommendations, justify an increased budget for the department if it doesn't currently meet its performance targets and therefore underspends on its expected budget for the first 4 years? Because it makes it very difficult to justify this with Treasury as to why you should be getting more money if you're not spending your money as you should be. And I think the FFC also brought up some points in relation to the under expenditure this morning. And then also why the vacancies haven't been filled that should have been filled. They should also explain what they meant with, and I quoted it from the annual report, the non-alignment of the compensation for employees' budget with the structure. Could they say that in each and every program as a justification for underspending? And then also in relation to the UNMA, your country report, we know that they received donor funding to do this. So what is the relationship between the donor funding for this and the department spending on the editing, design, and layout? So where does the two meet each other? How do they cancel each other out? So why is there a delay? Speaking of donors, 4.2 deals with donor funding. The department gave us a list in the annual report of all the donor funding they received for the financial year. And they received on pages 55 and 56. It's there, and it's repeated somewhere in the back end in the financial statements. They received a total of 3.5 million in donor funding for the financial year. On page 7, I made a bit of a pie chart for you on just not to regurgitate what was in the annual report, but just to look at it per activity. Now, these are both for the 2011 and 12 and 12 and 13 financial year. So I just made a pie chart. One would see, for example, that it's the UN agencies, UNFPA, UN Women, and UNICEF, that contributes towards 31 out of the 53 activities funded by or sponsored or given as a gift by a donor. So it's just activity-based, not money-based. 31 out of 33 for 2011 and 12 and 12 and 13. And then they say CDSR donated towards one activity and the Japanese International Cooperation Agency, JICA, also contributed towards one activity. And even though the department has indicated the nature of the gift in terms of monetary value, it sometimes was difficult to assess under what program would that sponsorship or what I'll call assistance fall under. Does it fall under administration or wedge or CRR or RPD? And that's a bit difficult because sometimes they indicate that it would fall under both wedge, for example, and children. So we don't quite know what department or what program is capacitated with extra funding from donor or extra assistance from the donor. And then there are equally concerning activities which are funded by donors towards core activities of the department for which they actually receive an allocation from Treasury. For example, that if they indicate receiving money towards, in other words, they don't say how much the donor actually contributes or assists with. Like, is it 20% of the entire activity, or is it 30% of and Treasury the other 70% and so forth. For example, what's concerning is the fact that UN Women in total funded about 232,000 to the department in relation to international travel, both to Morocco and to CSW in 2013, if you add all of those up. And essentially, the department has budget for this as well, and as he said this morning, this is part of the department's core mandate, therefore they should have a travel budget, and it's expected, and they do have it. So why are UN Women funding stuff in relation, and why are the department accepting such funding in relation to traveling? Some questions I broke down here, especially one important one I want to go to is in relation to if the department is underspending on each of its programs and in total, and they're receiving donor funding. It doesn't sort of make sense to actually receive donor funding if you're underspending. It doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. And my question here is the department doesn't do service delivery, that's right, it's not within the mandate, but it do have an advocacy and mainstreaming agenda. And the question I posed on page 8 was the first one, what has the department done actually to advocate for funding of organizations that deliver core services to children, women, and people with disabilities in South Africa, especially looking at those statutory obligations? In other words, when the donor come and say, we'll fund you to go to CSW, have you said, no, sorry, we don't need that funding because we have a budget for it. Why don't you fund organizations that deliver services, the core statutory services, Because that's advocacy. That's the advocacy agenda which they can at least put their foot behind and say. And if they've done so, they should tell us what they've done so in that regard. And provide information on where they have advocated with donors to fund court service delivery by NGOs. For example, those delivering services to victims in court, those delivering, doing adoptions for children and children homes for orphans, etc. So those court services. Then the other question is basically an accurate, because I asked for a key question as an accurate breakdown to donor funding, largely because I think Honorable Amula mentioned this morning, we don't actually get an accurate reflection of what is actually donor funded. So now we have 3.5 million, which is audited by the AGSA because it's in the annual report. But as we noticed in the past, sometimes they couldn't give us an accurate reflection. The amounts change all the time and it seems to be a bit of disarray. So we need an accurate breakdown of donor funding received for each program and which, so that we can draw it back in relation to the under expenditure and see exactly why they didn't perform as they should have in terms of finances. And then I should also clarify CBSR, I think it is actually CSVR, which is a national NGO doing research and policy and advocacy work on in South Africa and Africa. And there, once again, then we should ask, why are we receiving funds from a national NGO as opposed to actually doing work and advocating for something else? And that's on page 55. Yeah, how does the department justify receiving donor funding when it doesn't spend all of its money allocated to it from Treasury for financial year? And then also, please, we were asking for a list before on information which activity the donor funded contributed towards based on the annual performance plan. There's nothing wrong with receiving donor funding. It's just we need you to know which is it and to exactly to what extent is the donor funding. So if you, for example, look at Addendum 1, which we would go through later, which next to this analysis, we actually have a list of things we came up with which we asked for the department in terms of reports, because they deliver reports. And in that list, we put up the program, all this list. With that, what Kashka did was she added what we have received from them out of the list, and what from that was actually done by donors. And on average, 50% was contributed also for by the donor of that report that they sent us. So we'll go through the list later. So the DG's report on the funding situation, we've heard this morning both by the AGSA and by the FFC on the, I just thought to bring out important points, and they brought those out as well. They regular expenditure of 6.1 million, and the department actually explaining at least what they're doing, and they're actually saying that they're investigating and putting remedial actions in place. And then the DG also mentioned that the department inherited a debt of 3 million from the previous office on the state of disabled people, which was then within the presidency. And the DG mentioned that in that regard they got some advice, they're seeking some advice from Treasury to actually write it off the debt that they're supposed to be receiving in that regard, and they're waiting for Treasury. So the questions I have in the DG's report essentially is not in relation to what went wrong with the 6.1 million. I'm rather asked, I think it's rather important to also gauge questions around what systems are you putting in place to ensure more on a sustainable measure to ensure minimum risk in your regular spending. The AG mentioned that this morning when they said daily and monthly controls, and I think those are important. And those are sustainable systems to put in place to ensure, and there's already been it's important to know why they've had real expenditure, and that investigation is important, but it's also equally important to know, to learn from it and not to do it in future, and what system of control is being put in place. And then the second one is basically what advice has the department received from Treasury with regards to the inherited debt from the office. So I think it's important to note that. Then ASA went through it this morning. They went through their own report. They went through their report this morning. They gave it an unqualified audit in relation to the financial statements reflecting a true and accurate reflection of the department's finances. They also mentioned, I'm not going to go too much on it because they've mentioned a lot they spoke about this morning, and members had strong engagement because what I'm saying is similar to what they said this morning. But this one addition, which I think is also important to note, is what the Attorney General picked up, which is what this Portfolio Committee has also picked up, is that the department's performance indicators and targets are not strategic, one, and they're not smart. Based on you want to do a lot, but you only have a little money. And ACTS picked it up, we've picked it up, and I think it's important just to note about how strategic plan is done within the department in future, and how they actually plan on making sure that they allocate it, that they don't try to do too much with the little money, but rather be focused and strategically focused on certain areas of importance to South Africa in relation to women, children, and people with disabilities. So the rest I'm not going to give much go into, but obviously the ACTS mentioned internal controls, leadership, management, etc. this morning. I'm not going to dwell too much on it as a matter of time because it's been dealt with this morning. I'm going to, because Clifford and I are playing relay, we sort of, I don't want you to listen to one person's voice all the time and be bored by it, so she's going to continue for a little bit.
And that's a lovely voice, we actually have it guys.
And then we'll continue. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Sixers with the other. We looking at the program performance, the document that members have is
Can I just mention one more thing? Sorry, Mike.
Yeah.
You've made me blush. in relation, it ties up to what Crystal was saying in relation to training on human resources, which this picked up, and I think thanks to also Mula Mula who brought this also to my attention. If you look at page 126 in relation to training and staff development on goods and services in annual report, their budget decreased from in 2011 and 12 from 105,000 to 79,000. Probably a reason why we get so little, we actually ask for training and so much asking and so little. But at the same time, the entertainment budget increased from 56,000 to 130,000. And the bursaries for employees went down from 39,000 to 19,000. Advertising went down from 6 million to 1.2 million, and we've spoken about the branding and the corporate branding of this department so much, and we've seen that within that financial year they've decreased an increase on quite core and important goods and services, which I think also requires a bit of discussion around. Thank you.
And
Michael,
and while we're on this issue, what I've also picked up is a hell of an increase in salary and no performance bonuses. That is something that we really need to speak about. The salaries have increased a lot, and there are no performance bonuses because we spoke on that. No, they are not. I'm just remembering that. I think that's not down. I'm not sure. Thank you too much.
Looking at the program performance, the document that says addendum 2 is also in relation to to section 5 in the analysis. The addendum is just a breakdown of per program, what has been, how many targets they've achieved and what they haven't achieved. And then obviously the analysis is a bit more detailed and also looks at, in terms of things that they didn't achieve, what the concerns are around those. So just to give an overall picture first, there was a total of 118 targets that the department had set for 2012-13, and they achieved 83 of those, which is, as the agency said this morning, is 70% of the targets have been achieved, but there's 50% that hasn't been, and we need to look at how that will be rolled over or implemented in the next financial year. I'm going to cover Program 1 and Program 2. So first looking at administration. On page 9, the first part is just a breakdown of the core functions of the program. If we turn over the page, the 5.1.1, the table on the review of administration's performance, that table just highlights a few of the concerns in terms of targets that weren't achieved. And again, it is all things that were covered this morning by the AG. So first, in terms of in-year monitoring, the department didn't achieve that, or rather they indicate in the report that they have, but the Auditor General highlights that it's a target that the department hasn't met.
Then second, in terms of lack of compliance with policy and precepts and financial internal control mechanisms, no risk assessment register and operational risk assessment reports, and no functional M&E system developed. So the concern there is that the lack of adequate financial control mechanisms and risk mitigating measures impact on the department's financial performance and how this is being addressed, and by when will outstanding policies, procedures and systems be implemented. Then they haven't developed an employee assistance program and suitable and compliant accommodation that has been secured. So how has this impacted on staff performance and morale? And then the implementation of the ICT governance framework. This has been something that's been highlighted consistently over the past 3 to 4 years. So after 4 years, it's concerning that they still haven't implemented the ICT governance framework. And just this morning, the AG was also indicating that they don't have effective IT systems and how that impacts on the information that they have available. So in terms of the financial information, the program had a budget of 85.2 million. Of which they spent 80.1 million, leaving the program with a total of 5 million. Moving over to program 2, there the department had a total of 70 targets that they set for 2012-13, and they've achieved 14 of those targets. Just also highlighting the three that weren't achieved. The first one there is engendering the new growth path and advocating for 50% allocation of job fat for women. So the question there is, has the target been rolled over to the 13-14 financial year? And then they indicated that they would develop 12 gender reports and 5 reports on compliance to national commitments, which they haven't been able to meet. But have these targets been rolled over to the next financial year? And if yes, has the department made adequate budgetary amendments to accommodate these targets? And do they have the adequate human resources in the government to undertake these audits and reports? Because as we indicated earlier, it's the core programs that are understaffed. So if you need to undertake all these audits, do you actually have the capacity to do that? So in terms of the financial performance for the program, they received 79.5 million, but 59.7 million of that was the CGE's transfer, which left the program with an operating budget of 20 million. Of the 20.4, they had spent 18.4 million, leaving the program with approximately 1.9 million, and given that they've achieved 13 out of the 14 out of the 17 targets, the expenditure patterns seem to balance. So then we will look at the child tax and disability program.
Just in relation to children and disability, in addendum 2, I've just highlighted there the targets that they 14 targets for children. As the FSC mentioned this morning, the Children's Rights and Responsibilities Program is the one that performs best out of all four. They report that they've met 13 out of those 14 targets. I'm still questioning one of them only, largely because when they presented the quarterly reports, they said they haven't achieved that specific target which related to child-friendly cities. In the quarterly report, in the annual report, it says achieved, but they also link it back to the National Plan of Action for Children, which was achieved, but they didn't say how that links up to the National Plan of Action for Children. So I still think it's probably 12 out of 14, but it's still, still quite better performed than anything, than any of the other programs. So I'm going to just focus on, in the analysis, under objective 1 of the children's program on page 13, they achieved all the targets. Targets not achieved were none, but there are some concerns in relation to the impact of social campaigns conducted. Like the commissioner of the FSE mentioned this morning, if you're going, for example, on International Travel Week, conducting a campaign, what is the impact of what is the impact that campaign had on the lives of women, children, and people with disabilities, in this case, children? Developing something, the concern there is developing a conduct note is not sufficient. We need a report post that to say how many people did you reach with a campaign, if it's an advertisement campaign. If you're having a Indaba in the community, how many people were in that community to actually be there with you and bring about children's issues? What were the issues that were raised and how do you think it could be addressed, etc.? The planned target for child participation in this program is quite vague. I think we need a bit more clarity. And generally, the need was more details needed on what was achieved. So it's almost like sort of number crunching and just is achieved. But I think sometimes you need a bit more explanation than just the column. The column is great. Table is lovely. Fine. It's wonderful. We want to see it that way. But a little bit more explanation at the bottom, for example, on how it actually impacted. Objective 2 deals with monitoring and evaluation of the department. And once again, they achieved all their activities there. And then just one thing that the portfolio committee have mentioned over and over is that it needs to inform of how the M&E strategy for children, which they've now given to us, differs from the institutional M&E, which is the one they presented on oversight in March to the committee. I mean, we can read ourselves, but we just need to make sure that they're not the same or what differences are not, they're not being duplicating work or making work harder for themselves. Because they have M&E for disability as well, M&E for women, and institutional M&E. In relation to objective 3, which deals with institutional support and capacity building, this is where 2 targets were not achieved. The institutional framework was not developed, and the child-friendly city one, which is the one that we've been questioning. And yet, it's again the concern the department, and I've mentioned that, cites that the National Plan of Action for Children as an achievement for the 5 child-friendly cities performance indicators. So it's confusing, essentially. And then the department will first somehow indicate how the institutional framework for children will differ from the 2018 institutional framework. And the rationale behind having many institutional and programmatic frameworks. And I have a lot of these documents and a lot of them, but what is you spending time on it, you're spending energy on it, you're spending money on it, you're spending human capacity on it, you're going to have all of these institutional frameworks, and what are they going to do? You're going to have too many of them. Are they duplicating or not? So in relation to the money, they've had 13 million, actual expenditure was 9 million, and they've reported this incorrectly to us on the quarterly reports, which is, I guess it's just probably a human error, with an under expenditure of 3.8 million. And if you look at in terms of performance, like the SSC mentioned value for money, we sort of received value for money from this program, from the department, based on the amount of things they got done and the amount of spending in relation to that. It's sort of on par, similar to being on par, which we've also picked up in the quarterly reports. Program for disability, that's the more concerning program for me at least as well, the concerning, largely because they had 16 targets, out of which 10 targets were not achieved out of the 16. And even in this, as the ASC mentioned this morning, they actually have a staff complement of 10 for this program and 6. Or was it 6 or 8 for the children's rights program? They're actually more staff, more money, and they haven't achieved 10 of these targets. And basically, I mean, the targets not achieved was the fact that the National Disability Policy, which is coming for years and years and years, is still not been published. The Universal Access Strategy is not approved. The SA Country Plan on the African Decade for under Objective 1 is not approved, and I didn't go too much detail here, largely because we've also dealt with a lot of these issues on the quarterly reports in relation to the performance. So it's more about under the concern, what is the additional technique? Because what they've been saying as justification for the deviation on not achieving the target was that it will be achieved in the next financial year under a UN partnership to promote the rights of persons with disabilities. Now, what is the nature? Because it comes up in a lot of the targets. If they never reached, it will be carried over to the next year and will be done with this partnership with the UN. Now, what does this partnership entail? What does it consist of? What is the financial implication of this UN? Because what's the trend that we're sort of seeing more and more as researchers? We're seeing the trend that things are getting done because of donor funding and because of donor assistance, because technical, whether it's technical or financial. And the same year, because for this financial year, this program was hardly donor funded and only reached 6 of its 16 performance indicators or 6 of its 16 targets. So there's a lot, for example, where children's rights actually receive quite a bit of assistance, whether technical or financial or sponsorship from donors. And that's the trend that is sort of picking up. There's nothing wrong with that, but we need to know what is exactly the relationship. Because Treasury also gives money and the department is accountable to this portfolio committee on how it spends that money from Treasury as well. Under Objective 2, there's four targets which were not achieved, once again. And if you look in the concerns, it's all again also in relation to this, to the UN partnership to promote the rights of persons with disability in the next financial year. The department in February presented the UN country report on the rights of people with disabilities to this portfolio committee. We were all here, and this was under Objective 2, but they still haven't submitted it to the UN, and it was supposed to be done in that last financial year, because Cabinet hasn't approved it yet, so they haven't submitted it to Cabinet even. And what they've done in the annual report is they've twisted the target to say that UNCRPD country report requirements complied with. So they complied with it. That's true, but that's not the target. The target is submission of the report in terms of the annual performance plan. So the question is, what is the progress of this of submitting this country report? Has it gone to Cabinet? When will it go to Cabinet? Because once again, we're going to be late again with this, because it doesn't take human resources to file it with Cabinet. It doesn't take money to file it with Cabinet to put it on the agenda. It doesn't take that much time. So what was the delay in doing that? And then under Objective 3, institutional support and capacity development for equal actors, three of the targets were not achieved. And once again, it's more of concern. I think that the recommendation there would be that the DG actually, or the DDG for this program, actually need to give a lot of priority and attention to the performance of this program. The financial performance, 15 million received, 30 million spent, and 2 million underspent, which left with 2 million left. And here, once again, the question is value for money. Have we received value for money in relation to the performance? Probably not, because they spent about 85.9% of their budget and delivered only about 33% of the performance achieved. So that's a bit concerning as relation to Program 4. And overall, in general, the report, like the FSC and the AG said this morning, the report is presented much better. There's a much better structure to it. It sort of links in most cases to, in most cases, not all, but in more cases, to the annual performance plan. So there seems to be a general improvement happening year by year as we see go along. There are still quite a couple of spelling, typing, and grammar errors, and there's a lot of repetition, but that's not neither here nor there really in relation to the impact. And just about looking at a bit more accuracy, and there are lots of challenges in the programs, especially the core programs 2, 3, and 4, which need to be addressed within the department.
Members, I just want to add one thing. When you look at the annual report, the new DD has signed off as the accounting officer, and she was not appointed for the period under review. I think that, and the CFO as well. So it's just concerning that she's taking responsibility for a year when she wasn't improving the department. And I think that's something that needs to be clarified as well.
Sorry, I just add to that as well, because the AG this morning mentioned a lot that the accounting officer has to take responsibility for, and she wasn't the accounting officer. I think it would be a bit unfair to actually have her take responsibility for things that she didn't do and she wasn't there. I think it needs to be highlighted as such as well.
The last one, in terms of deliverables, now that we've heard from all the programs in terms of content, this is the page, is deliverables for 2012-13. You've heard from the Reverend Crystal, has given us an overview of performance and as well as the financial overview in relation to each program. About a month ago, we requested the department to submit to the committee evidence of reports or publications of which they've done for the year 2012-13, along with information pertaining to HR, finance, and the rest. What we've done is we've documented in terms of for each program what is the publication and report as cited in the annual report or the quarterly report, and one, the members requested, so did we receive it? Yes. If we didn't, then there's an X. If there's another document that was submitted, we indicate that as well. Often the title of the document you may have received in one of those three packs, sometimes it kind of relates to something which they said they did, but you're not quite sure. What we've also noticed is in the last column, donor funding. So if we just glance over program one in that deliverable for 2012-13, there were 15 publications or reports which they said they either highlighted that in their quarterly report or in their annual report as an achievement, as something that they said they were going to do or have done. We have received 7 of those reports or publications. So it would have been in one of those 3 PAC members that received over the past 2 weeks. Out of the 7, you'd note that on far right-hand column, under donor funding, 3 of the 7 have actually been done on account of them receiving donor support, assistance. They don't indicate what that assistance entails, but I think it's for the committee to understand, well, when you delivered on these products, what does this assistance entail? What does that mean? If we go to the wage program on page 2, out of the 19 reports, publications they said they would do, would deliver, give us, they've actually given us 8. So we have 8 pieces of evidence, 5 of which they received donor support or assistance. Just to highlight the issues where you need clarity, if you go to number 8, gender audit of Eastern Cape Kaling FC Provincial Administration. 1, in your pack that you received a fortnight ago, there's a fact sheet, and it relates to representation of women in the public service, dated 2013. If you're not sure if that's in relation to gender audit or not, but also UNFPA provided assistance with the gender audit in the case in the future, but they don't indicate what that assistance entails. So the same applies to the children's program, as well as the program for the rights of persons with disabilities. Again, as Lorenzo indicated, all the rights of persons with disabilities, of the 12 things they said they would do in terms of handing over publication, they gave us 2 pieces. The cancer report, which we had been submitted to the UNet, and then the report on the survey of conditions in special schools, which in actual fact was captioned program 1 as well. So it's cross-legged. I think the table is helpful in that members have always asked, please show us or give us an indication of what you've done throughout the year. The fact that they've been able to collate and bind documents is really helpful. But I think the step further is to say, what are the outcomes of what you've written? What does that mean? What I'll do for members tomorrow, given that we've received loads of information this morning and afternoon, is to provide you some of the key things to bear in mind as you look at the BRR next week. Because the budget report, budgetary and recommendation report, is retrospective, so we think back and reflect back, but there's also an impact of the year forward. So it's a dual section process. So one, I will capture for you what were the things that you asked in your BRR last year. What did the department do as progress in terms of implementing that this year? But what are the outstanding issues? What are the things of concern? I think over and above what was discussed today and highlighted, I think the other important issue to bear in mind and inquiring to ask is the issue of collaboration. We've heard across all these programs they're doing so many things. How are they ensuring collaboration between programs? National Council on Gender-Based Violence, how are they working with WEGE? How are they working with the Children's Program and the Disability Program? How are they working with the CGE, WEGE and the CGE around the gender audit, for example? Understanding that the CGE is mandate and all the rest, but in our oversight visit, if you remember, there was a research unit within the TGE that focused on very specific things which said, oh, but that's not very familiar to what our department is doing.
Right.
So I think the issue of collaboration is very important to look at how we can help and ensure that they enhance what they're doing, not duplicate, but utilize the resources in the most effective way. So next week, Wednesday, we will have our budget review and recommendation report, which captures the discussions from the AG, input from the FFT, our engagement model with the annual report, as well as issues that have come up with oversight out of the year, recommendations which members have made, follow-up issues which we have taken. So the first draft of that report will be handed to members by next Tuesday afternoon. So that on Wednesday morning, I will take members through the entire report. There's an opportunity for engagement and input. It will be edited, and then on Thursday morning, we will adopt. Go through the entire report, look at whether we agree to the observations made and the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. I hope that you've been following and noting. Are there any clarification that you would like to have? Comments? Honorable Merve, Honorable Ramula, in that order.
I wanted to get clarity here in the financial report. It's not clear to me how many. Is it 188 funded posts?
Yes,
that's got, and that's got a, and that's got currently 102 employees.
Yeah.
But at one stage, in one of the pages, it says that I've got 123 employees. There's 188 that's got, because at one stage they list 108.
188.
No.
Number of employees at the beginning of period of April of it's 126 and then they've lost people and then it goes down to 123 of the I'll check the page. But I'm showing Mr. Lamula earlier they one at one stage they're saying that they've currently got 123.
Okay, but go on. Chairperson, I'm trying to get a hold of my page. No. You know what I don't know if I'm wrong and I need somebody to lead me on this one. Actually, I'm a bit worried about the employee, shall I say, status or right in the department. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but to me, it is the equity is not right. Right? It's on the page of the annual report, page 70. The equity is... Okay, are you okay with the equity of employees in the department on page 70? That's not my first question. And then, I think we can elaborate on resignation too. I know you're going to be very cross with me, but I know that the resignation on page 72, I would love to know if the resignation in this report is in contrast with the Flumsman report. That one, I'd love to have some clarity on. And then, as I said, it surprises me on page 81. If you look on the details of health promotion and HIV AIDS program, on their wellness events and wellness days, surely HIV AIDS falls in that category. Yet they say has been included in 2013-14. It should be a matter of urgency for them to deal with that issue of HIV AIDS in the workplace.
And then a salary, I know I put it up here somewhere, I can only just fill up a salary. But there's a very big increase in salaries. I do not see anything on performance bonuses. But there is a huge increase in salary scale, which I am very unhappy about. Truly, it will from 30 up to 40 something. I'm sorry, what is that? Help me.
I'll find it.
I'm just trying to get it. I know there's a huge increase there. 72? Salary sales?
Promotion workers. Promotion, what's the new band?
No, it's not the salary band. It states clearly it goes from 30 odd million to 40 odd million. And that is just to
you. Page 125.
Is it 125?
Yeah, it's about 10.
But it's not just the normal yearly increase.
But can it be? I want some help on that one. Yeah. It's this one, basic salary. 2011, 12, it was 13, 338. 2012, 13, it was 42,469. What percentage is that of the overall budget of the department? Is it I don't pick up, there is no performance awards here anymore.
That in fact just before they left, they told me that one of the reasons why they cannot retain staff and why staff are leaving is because they cannot offer performance bonuses and they can offer like increases as the other departments. So they are saying that's one of the reasons why they cannot attract new staff or even retain the staff is because they can't give performance bonuses or increases.
But this is a huge increase. It's a 12 million rand increase per year on salary.
Okay, that wasn't the organogram that you asked for. Because this is so poor, it's like a few blocks.
I'm sure members here know some of the questions that you would need. Bear in mind that our salary scale is about 4.5.
No, you see 2%. On this page 56, they're telling me I've got 142 staff members, number of employees. 66 at the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Doesn't they? So they sort of saying that there are 180 expanded posts, they've got 102 filled posts, but here they've got 142 people.
Is this funded or unfunded?
Employees.
And to me, the answer that I owed, they had 123.
When I looked at the 188, it says there on page 67 that the tables in the section summarize the position with regard to employment and vacancies. Note that the number of full posts is in relation to the actual number at the end of the reporting period
for the financial year.
So if I look at that table, the first table there is that there's 188 people at the end of the reporting period. So that's approved, and that 102, or that at the end of the reporting period, there was 102 people. 102.
But that means that they've lost 40 along the way.
Those are things that they will need to indicate us, whether people have been transferred, people have resigned, people have...
Because
there are differences.
They speak on transfer.
Yes.
They speak on transfer,
but
they speak on...
But it's not... In total, the number of people that have left is 19.
Yeah,
but if... Look, at the end of the reporting period, it was 102. 102 add 19 121. So, but I'm saying so that the other figures, the figures that have 123 and others we're seeing are before the people that have. I'm just saying in terms of at the end of by the end of March this year, it was 102 people.
Okay.
Which means
a lot
of
people
along the way. Along the way.
Mm. Which is not reflected in this table because here it says that last 19 staff.
Yeah. 19.
Yes.
They have suspended 9,
yes.
And they have.
It checked the thing. Will it be 72?
Page.
72.
6 is 15.
Yeah.
I think you need to give us relevant details to this. Why people were dismissed or why they were suspended.
They do.
And who were the packages of those people, because I didn't pick it up at
the time. On page 72 is 72.
Yeah.
Mm. 72
numbers. Well, we'll write it down. But to be cheap, isn't the problem is, you know, and even, you know, even with other entities, the issue of skills, we've been talking about with them about a skills audit for a very long time. They were supposed to have a PMFA workshop a long time ago. So those are issues that keep on coming up. And we've actually been talking about this even in the last annual report. We talked about the skills audit. We talked about the vacancies. And these vacancies are critical. It's funded, but they... And for me, you know, in a country where there's so much unemployment, how can we not find people to work? You know, and it's another thing. We've got a department that's supposed to look after people with disabilities, and yet we don't employ them when it's funded stuff. For me, I mean, I don't see it why we can't pull this first. You place an advertisement in the newspaper, you interview people, you find correct skills, and you employ them, and then you will be able to improve your performance. I don't understand what the answer could be, really.
Mm-hmm. I think...
Not even
that. Or do they not get the right
people with skills as well that other people don't.
And the equity too on employees in the department, they can't just employ from one side. If we're in a democracy, everybody needs to apply. If they're not doing it on their own, that can be a setback to the department, because that can be the reason why they do not have skills that they need in the department. They should really look further and wider when appointing. Non-racialism.
No, Chair, doesn't it say that in terms of the equity that Islam is referring to, that table is on page 73. The table on page 70 is speaking about employees that have salary levels higher than those detailed by job evaluation. So the equity table is on page 73. Yeah, and it's even employees with disabilities.
It's not good enough. And not to depress you, person, but I'm looking through the other annual reports in my other committees, and there's some of them that are showing zero people with disabilities.
Yeah, but in comparison even to that table, if you look at the table 7-5-5-3-3, it cannot be that it doesn't.
I've never seen this where they say target 100% not achieved as planned.
Right?
100% not achieved
as planned.
On page 22. It's a foreign concept for me.
The plan.
I've read so many reports and this one is very easy. We plan not to achieve this by
100
days.
And with regard to the department's supply chain management policy, and they say 100% not achieved as planned. Your fault.
Me.
Thank you.